Okay, he's still here. The power is still there, wherever there is. It's gone. Went off this morning around 5, and they fixed it, but obviously they didn't fix it properly. So we'll see. Could take an hour, could take a minute. You never know. You never know. All right. It's the Jeff and Erica COVID Chronicles Hour for Monday, and we have our special guest and friend and colleague on, Nurse Ann. She'll be with us in just a few minutes, so hold on for that. She, if you don't know, has worked in a number of New York's biggest hospitals, 600, 700, 800 beds, that kind of thing. She knows what's going on with this bioweapon. She knows that people are dying. She knows they're dying incrementally. She watches it all the time, and it can be a dozen different things, 2, 3 dozen different things that they put down as cause of death on the death certificate. Never will they mention Pfizer Moderna injection. Won't happen. Well, he died of a stroke. Yeah, he died of a heart attack. Blood clots. He died of this, that, and the other. There's so many things, as we've made clear for well over 2.5 years now. It's really crazy out there. All right, time to bring on the better half, certainly the prettier half of this research team. We do so much out there to try and bring reality to you, and I don't know how one could ask for a better partner. She's the best. Hello, young lady.
Hi, Jeff.
Welcome. All right,
well,
don't
you've softened
anything.
Me
That's
up.
Right. I
okay.
We have been trying to, and this has nothing to do with narcissism, arrogance, snobbery, ego. We're just trying to help people who have, as Erica said, found the alt news world and think that they have found the truth. They may be in more deeper trouble than had they stayed with the mainstream media. It depends on which of the lights you affix yourself to. And I would say 90% of the big names in the alt news world are frauds, phonies, adjuncts, assets, disinformation specialists, and tools of the deep state intel community that is running this world genocide. Whether they're getting paychecks or getting some kind of special deferential treatment, there are many ways to pay people to compensate them for their, quote, loyalty. And we know when somebody's spewing, I don't want to say shit, so I won't. When someone's spewing crap out there, we know instantly. And many of you know, too. Now, some of you are trying, and I'm not saying that we have the ultimate truth on everything. We don't. But you're never going to get conned here. You're never going to get hustled. You're not going to get told there's snake venom in your drinking water, in pharmaceuticals, in all the food, and on and on and on. And this artist is not stopping. He's pushing this venom thing like there's no tomorrow. And it is what it is. It's BS. So forget it. We know about the peptides. We reported about the peptides on that spike maybe 2 years ago. I don't know. It's been a hell of a long time. So I'm just trying to again, forewarned is forearmed. When you walk through that alt news world, you better have your armor on, your intellectual armor, because you're going to get assailed, assaulted, and conned very cleverly by many of what you think are the unbelievably powerful main sources of information in the alt news world. They're corrupt. They're corrupted. What else can I say? All right, that's it. Done.
Well said. It really is frightening from my perspective. I mean, I never really followed much of this until the past. Well, you know, when the whole scamdemic started, I knew something was wrong and began pursuing truth, and you were more apt to find accurate information in the alt news at that time. But boy, have things ever changed. And I almost think that the truther movement, those who are awake to this, have a target on their back now. because they know what's going on.
Right.
Good
point.
You know, have friends and relatives who have taken the vax, and they've seen what's happening, and they think because they have not taken the vax that they are somehow impervious to this assault on humanity, and they're not. I think some of these so-called recovery protocols for shedding are designed to make people more susceptible to the effects of shedding. It's astonishing.
We've talked about this in private on, and Erica brings up information that I would never have thought about out of scientific papers and so forth, and she's right. A lot of these so-called therapies and treatments, protocols to detox your body, they're making things worse. And we think
they
that's
are.
By design in some cases. You're going to get worse, and you won't know it. Your pocketbook's going to get lighter, that's for damn sure. But your health could easily take a turn for the worse with some of this crap. See, CDS, we've talked about that and why it's not the answer. And if you buy into the snake venom thing or there are no viruses crap, you're out of the game. You're done. You're done. You're just going to be swept along like the rest of the flotsam and jetsam into the trash can of history. You're not going to make it.
I'm very suspicious of this now. Very suspicious. There's no magic bullet here. That's the problem. And people are looking for the quick fix, magic bullet, how do I go back to having a normal life? And there really isn't. This poison undermines people's physiology in so many different ways, and it adds to whatever the person was dealing with prior to that. There are countless people now who are suffering from this MCAS syndrome, which is mast cell activation syndrome, where your mast cells, parts of your immune system, are overactivated, producing copious amounts of histamine and maintaining a highly inflammatory condition. You can't do any detoxing when your body is in that situation. You have to get the body to calm down first. And nobody that's pushing these venom protocols or self-assembling AI parasite protocols is acknowledging that,
protocols.
Taking it into account.
None of it. No.
When your body is in fight or flight, which it is when you've been poisoned by this, you're in sympathetic overdrive, you cannot detox. Won't happen. So
Sorry
you need
a
tailored approach. Testing needs to be done. If you're really sick, I would recommend finding a functional medicine doctor that has some understanding of this pathology and finding out what you need as a individual to deal with this. Because it's going
to
be different for everybody. There's no one-size-fits-all.
It's a custom formulation. And again, there are no magic fixes. And people pushing magic bullet fixes, believe me, are doing so with the blessing of the deep state. Or they wouldn't be able to get away with
it. Right. Every time you turn around, if you're having that narrative shoved at you, no matter where you look, be suspicious.
Very good. All right, we need to get moving here and get to that. We have one reader we want to do early here. It's about emergency rooms. Everybody gets sick. They get worried. Where do they go? They race off to the ER. And in many cases, they end up sitting there for over 20 hours waiting to be seen. No joke. Some hospitals are so busy now. Well, tell them what you saw the other day, yesterday.
Well, yeah, this was a first in this area. One of the mid-sized hospitals, local hospitals, actually had a code black over the weekend, which means the ER was so overwhelmed and understaffed that they couldn't take on any more new patients. They had to defer them to, well, another hospital somewhere. And this particular hospital was probably about 200 beds in a somewhat urban area.
Okay. Word to the wise, you may not see it. The MSM will not tell you, but things are not getting better. They are getting worse. We'll hear that from Nurse Ann in detail in just a couple of moments. We have one reader that we should do. It's about ERs. Go ahead and do that one.
Okay, this is in the States. I had to look because depending on where you are, you might get really good treatment, you might get pretty bad treatment. This is someone named Wendy. This is just a vent. Feeling a little frustrated tonight. At doctor's request, I went to the ER for a second time in 1 week due to dizziness, heart palpitations, severe headache, extreme fatigue. I couldn't get out of bed. The doctor recommended going to the ER instead of urgent care because the ER could do a transfusion or infusion if needed. ER does another chest x-ray, another EKG, and more blood work. Doctor comes in the room, and this is what ensues. ER doc, all your blood work is fine. I'm not saying you don't have symptoms, but we don't see anything wrong with you. Me, really? Because I have the same results of the blood work on my phone saying something very different. You didn't see that I'm anemic? Because I've been anemic for months, and I'm pretty sure the reason for all of my symptoms. ER doc, yes, you are anemic, but that shouldn't cause any symptoms. Me, death stare.
Oh, really?
Are you being serious right now? My doctor sent me here to get a transfusion, and you don't even acknowledge my anemia? What the? ER doc. The ER really only takes care of heart attacks and strokes and things like that. You'll have to see a specialist regarding your anemia. Then proceeds to give me a list of specialists that includes a pulmonologist, an endocrinologist, an infectious disease specialist, and GI.
They just
tell me you're
just
clueless without actually
away.
Telling me you're clueless.
Goodbye. Clueless. Yeah, tell me you're clueless without saying it. You just did.
I was sent home and told to take Tylenol. I'm speechless. Well, how many times a day does that happen?
Incredible. What I would particularly comment about is the idea of getting a blood transfusion. You might as well line up for Pfizer and Moderna simultaneously.
Yes, yes. They're not screening the blood for spike or vaccine.
No.
Residues.
No. No, and probably not even for HIV anymore. They were for a while, allegedly. But
they've lowered the standards significantly.
Things get by. You can go. What is it? You can donate blood. I forget what it is. If you had a negative HIV test, even if you've had 20 positives. Anyway, it's something. You don't want to get a transfusion, dear friends. You don't want to do that. Now, if your life's on the line and you've been in an auto wreck and you have to have a transfusion, what are you going to do?
Well, again, if it's an emergency situation, you don't have a lot of choices. But there is that at least one blood bank, unvaxxed blood bank exchange that I know of, which is that Radiant Health Exchange, which was started by that breast cancer surgeon, very esteemed breast cancer doctor, Kathleen Reddy. So RadiantHealthExchange.com, I think it is.
You'd think they'd come up with some kind of a synthetic, I hate this, but some kind of a synthetic safe plasma fluid that could take up volume when you need volume in your circulatory system.
Well, I think they do have synthetic blood. I don't know if they're using it, though.
I've not seen it, if they are, but that's something that would be an obvious thing. You're getting, my God, if you take a transfusion and the blood supply is mixed, which it usually is, you're getting a dumpster full of potential catastrophe in that transfusion.
Yeah.
You're not just getting white and red cells and nice little immunological components and factors. You're getting garbage. All right, so there you go. ERs are a real dice roll, so are hospitals. Let's bring on our esteemed colleague and friend, Nurse Anne, who has been with us many times now. So we welcome you back, Nurse Anne. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Jeff and Erica. How are you?
Hi, Anne.
We're still
good.
Here. Yeah. And you,
listen,
dear,
more
how are you?
I am good. I am finished for a little while and getting ready to go back home. So it's
You're
all good
home.
For me.
Good
I'm
job.
Going home.
She gets to go home. Well, I hope things, and I guess we can say where you're from, huh, originally?
Yes.
I hope things in Ireland are okay. I've read some awful things, and I read some nice things, but going home is going to be quite a sensory impact on you, I think.
Yeah, when was the last time you were there?
Nearly 4 years ago, before all of this started.
My goodness.
Wow.
Yes, it's been a long time.
All right, well, when Nurse Ann says she's finished for a while, that means she works on a contract basis, like most nurses seem to now. They're called traveling nurses. The money is quite good, and if you're good, you earn every damn penny of it. If you're not good, and there are people who apparently aren't qualified like they claim they are to get this kind of advanced money, and they do take these contract jobs as travel nurses, some have been found out that they're just like an LVN or something. They're not an advanced professional. So that's kind of funny, too. Let's go, if we can, and I hate to do this to you because you've just taken a break and you're getting away from it, but inquiring minds out there around the world would like to know what it's like inside the hospital, like it was when we talked last time. Is it worse? Is it better? And when Erica mentioned her local hospital, one of them, with a couple hundred beds or thereabout, went code black. They refused to take anybody. That's maybe a harbinger of things to come.
Yeah, I think, Erica, you're on the right track because the hospitals are hurting. It's nationwide. And the contract that I just came off is actually governmental run. It was actually monies supplied by the government to the hospital to try and help the hospital out because the hospital could not get the staff. And they had a company who was a travel nurse company basically be like a third-party administrator to find the nurse talent, bring it into the hospital, and then the money came right from the government to the company, and the company was to disperse the money to the nurses they hired. So the hospital, in fact, was not actually paying the travel nurses at all, which used to be the case. So it was kind of like a FEMA-run program.
Got it. Understood. And it's not our FEMA, and it's not our government, but it's our money, such as it is.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go into the hospital you were in. How busy, how crazy, and is there any indication that there's going to be some kind of coherence imposed on the madness that's there? I mean, people are coming in all the time now, many of them just out of fear. They're not really needing to go to ER or ICU ultimately. They're afraid. They're sick. Yeah. These are illnesses and symptoms and disorders that are caused by the bioweapon that are not necessarily textbook. They may be becoming textbook, but they're very random and often difficult to diagnose. So tell us what it was like there.
Yeah, the ER was constantly chaotic. It was constantly full. There were people on gurneys and on chairs in the hallway lined up. I mean, there wasn't a night where we weren't getting admissions. And it was one admission after the next. So our unit was extremely busy. And it was also, the nurse-patient ratios were absolutely appalling.
What's it supposed to be, Nurse Ann? What is the ideal?
When you were in an ICU environment, you are at max would have three patients at max in an ICU environment.
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing is they're basically saying we want these patients closely monitored. There's nowhere else to send them. We're going to send them to these nurses, but they're not true ICU patients. But they turn out to be actually worse than some of the ICU patients because they hold on us, they crash on us, they come in with multiple issues that haven't been discussed in the ER prior to them coming up to the unit. But we end up in a horrific situation where a bunch of patients who really needed a lot of good quality care are getting the minimal amount of care because we are just inundated with the amount of patients we are getting. And supervision is there's no control. The supervision don't come to help. They stop by and look in, and then they walk away. I mean, it's absolutely most dangerous time in my career that I've actually taken a job.
Wow. So you're saying
every night you pray you don't lose your license.
You don't lose your life or your license?
Your license.
License. Okay. Well, right. Your life either. I mean, you're being exposed
well.
All the time.
Right.
You're saying is that people are coming into the ER nonstop. The paramedics are running back and forth, back and forth. They're bringing people in. There's no room for them. You're stacked. And so they're being screened. Let's be frank. They're being screened poorly and then sent on to you, the real professionals, to try to figure out what the hell's wrong with these people. Am I hearing it right?
Yes. Yes. And what's usually happening in the ER, they're basically bringing them in, saying potentially they may have a stroke. If we're really, really lucky, they'll do a CAT scan while the patient is down there. Otherwise, they send them all the way up to our unit, only for us to turn around and take them all the way down in an elevator. So we're now leaving the floor with patients that we should be monitoring. We're leaving the floor, and we're now taking them to CAT scan and MRI. And it's an absolutely huge, dangerous thing. So now what they're doing in order to keep the nurse on the floor to manage the patients that are already in the unit, they're basically having transporters come up and take the patients down to the CAT scans and the MRIs. Now, what happens if the patient codes or has a seizure while en route down to the seven levels of diagnostic testing, and you have a transporter who all he knows how to do is push a gurney, and now you have somebody who's probably going to go code or have a seizure while they're being transporters. The transporter won't know what to do other than just get them down there as quickly as possible.
So you're actually ordering the tests, MRI, whatever, that should have been ordered by the ER people?
What's happening is the ER is getting so busy, the doctors are shifting their ER responsibilities off to the doctors on the units, on the floors. So what's happening is rather than filtering it out right away, they're usually sending them up to the floors where the doctors who are assuming the care are saying, they got to get a CAT scan, they got to get an MRI, they got to get all this blood work done, need this now. And so we're operating as ICU/ER. So what?
You are?
What happens?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're doing what ER nurses should have been doing and what ER doctors should have been doing.
Oh, this is
and
crazy.
9 times out of 10... They have really bad strokes, really horrific strokes, really horrific bleeds.
Okay, now hold on, this is important. One doctor said in that last thing you read, Erica, that all we really take care of anymore are heart attacks and strokes. That was another hospital. Now here's Nurse Ann repeating that all she's seeing there, 90% are severe strokes. Severe strokes. I hope all of you out there are thinking in your minds the obvious question that should be the first question asked of anyone who is brought to an ER. And that question is, how many shots have you had? Is that question being asked,
yep.
Anne?
That question's been asked, and all of the patients, with the exception probably of one, are two patients at most in the last 3 months have said, I've never got the vaccine and I never will. Everybody else is vaxxed to the max. They've all got their boosters and they've got everything else that's been pushed on them. So all of these people we're seeing are 100% vaxxed plus.
So they're stroking bat severely. Now, these aren't little minor ischemic things. These are big strokes. Give us some examples of the kinds
stroke.
Of things.
Massive.
Yeah.
So, for example, there's a 60-year-old, and she's coming in completely and utterly confused with right-sided weakness. That was a dead giveaway right off the bat. She had a stroke. Everybody knew it. They put her on the heart monitor in the ER. Her heart rhythm is 200 beats per minute. She's in AFib, rapid ventricular rhythm. And they'll go and they, this is the one person they actually did send down to CT, which was probably a good thing because they were actually thinking, how are they going to treat this stroke? And she was having an active bleed, so they couldn't give her anticoagulation treatment.
Where was the bleed? Where was the bleed?
Her bleed was, let's see, the MRI showed it. Let's see.
So it was a cranial bleed.
An acute left basal infarct associated with a hemorrhage on the right side. So she actually had a massive bleed and a stroke all at the same time, and she came in AFib on the monitor. So now what brought that event on first? The heart issue or what's the problem? What was it, or the stroke? What brought all these events on? But in any case, she was a patient that was so severely sick, and it was too late for her. Trying to treat her was too complicated. And in the end, they spoke to the family. They talked to the family, and they said the treatment for her is very complicated because they have a bleed, and they have a stroke, and they have the AFib, with the rapid ventricular rhythm, which they have to be very careful how they treat that. And usually that's blood thinners and trying to slow the rate down with cardizem and low pressure and things like that. So anyway, in the end, they decided to make her a DNR, DNI, but not till a whole 24 hours had passed. And right at that, this is a very critical patient, very critical. This patient takes all your time up, all of it. So if you've got six other patients, they don't see you.
Wow. This stroke issue, and you all heard Nurse Ann describe this clearly. She's still bleeding intracranially in her brain. They can't give her blood thinners. They need to stop that bleeding. And yet there's a stroke involved. Now that brings up the next question. What kind of stroke is it? A blood clot stroke, or is it an amyloid stroke? And the amyloid stroke won't respond to any blood thinners, as we know. So what, do they even get that far? Does the MRI show what it is?
Oh, yeah. The MRI confirmed everything.
Does it confirm
it
amyloid?
That a massive, oh, no. It won't show that. No. The only way to actually determine that is go in and actually do surgery.
Yeah, and find
she would
it.
Not have been, yeah, I can't find it.
So did she make it?
Once she's made DNR, DNI, she's palliative care was brought on the case.
Okay.
Like the MRI confirmed that she had the acute hemorrhagic left middle cerebral artery stroke is what it confirmed. And then it confirmed the bleed as well.
And these happen commonly, this kind of a catastrophic stroke.
We're seeing the worst type of stroke I've ever seen. I mean, normally you would see a person who had a stroke on one side of their body, one side of their head, and you would see some element of hope and recovery. You know, as long as you wouldn't see it necessarily with a bleed, but. Now we're seeing the stroke and the bleeds coming in at the same time. Plus, the irregular heart rhythms. It's all happening at the same time. And the worst in that case was another case that I saw where she had three strokes, like three stroke sites in her brain. She had the frontal, the occipital area, and the thalamic area all showed she had stroke in them three areas of her brain.
Oh, my gosh.
Three.
And we don't know if those were...
It's bad, we have one.
All right. You've got spike protein causing microclotting in the brain, right? You have spike protein leading to the formation of amyloids in the brain, which will also cause strokes. And they're not able to differentiate that without surgical intervention to determine what it is. So you're really, you got one hand tied behind your back in a way, and if they're bleeding and stroking, that's almost two hands tied behind your back.
And the other thing is, I hate to say this out loud, but I'm going to say it because it is the case. Even if it is an amyloid clot, even if they went in and they actually operated on the patient and they pulled out the clot, they'll never tell the family that it was amyloid related. They will just refer to it as a clot. And everybody assumes a clot means blood clot. But I'm here to tell you, not that. That's not the case. But they will never tell you.
All right, Anne, let me ask you another question, not to step too far aside here, but Eric and I spent a lot of time talking and researching and thinking about this, and it does seem that there is a growing cascade of people who have been injected 1 to 2 years ago who are now beginning to show, to manifest things like you're describing, which heretofore have been subclinical or sub-damaging. They're not to the point where they're doing overt damage. And all of a sudden, over time, these clots, amyloid and or blood, are getting to the point now where they're doing catastrophic damage. We think that there's going to be a tremendous push in this direction of people showing up with very severe wounds, not just to the brain, but to all major organs, clots everywhere. But if you get into the brain, into the brain neurology and all that, there's I don't know how anybody could even imagine getting out of that mess once they've had spike protein laced into their system.
Well, you're right about that. They are throwing clots, and that's the problem. I've said it so many times, but people, atrial fibrillation is one of the worst arrhythmias you can have because it sets you up for that situation where your atria are not pumping the way they should. They're just quivering, and the blood is pooling, and it's sticking together, and that's your first formation of a clot. And that's why atrial fib is a very serious arrhythmia to have, and it has to be treated and it has to be followed. People need to be taking their meds. Now, in some scenarios, there was where patients were not taking their meds, but that's very rare. Most patients will take the meds. So in these cases, we were seeing clots in the brain, clots in the heart, clots in the pulmonary lungs. And area. So it's called a pulmonary embolus. Clots in the extremities, which become like DVTs. And depending on if they think they can treat it with blood thinner, like they'll start them on heparin generally. Once it's diagnosed as a clot, when you're in the hospital, they'll put you on heparin. And then you're sent home on the pill form of a thinner. That's what's supposed to happen. That doesn't always happen. I'm not sure why people are falling short on this, but they're not putting some patients on the blood thinners when they go home, which is an absolute necessity. But if they go in and they draw out the clot in, say, the extremity, and that can happen, and it can be in the arms, it can be in the legs, they'll never tell you what kind of a clot they're pulling out. They'll just say clot. They remove the clot, and then everybody assumes it's a blood clot.
Cover up. You're not telling the truth. It's called the lie of omission. These poor people who are vaxxed to the max, fully vaxxed and boosted. By the way, the next booster is due out in about 6 weeks, I understand, middle of September. So get ready for the campaign to get your booster. And then the CDC, Erica, is going to do what? It looks like they're going to make it mandatory every year or try to.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard that.
Well, that not mandatory in the sense that you have to get it, but they're going to recommend it.
Yes.
It's a mandatory recommendation. So they're going to try and pull that off. These people who are shot up and have already sludge for blood. Now, that's not deviating,
it's
right?
Terrible.
You're still saying the same thing. It's sludge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yes. And, I mean, I know it because we have to get their blood work personally. And if they don't have an access line, it's almost impossible to get these patients. So usually in the ICU, they'll start putting an access line in. And then you'll find out the access line will pass just as quick. It's incredible how quickly the lines are clotting. They have patients where they put them on dialysis, and they'll put in a new perm cath, which is the catheter that they need to do the dialysis with, and that thing is clotting like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's a new size, it's a new catheter, and it's incredible how these things are clotting.
Sounds like it could clog up the machine, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they'll have to stop it halfway sometimes. They can't actually finish the dialysis. And that's another thing, they can't find dialysis nurses, by the way. I don't know where they're gone either. They've disappeared as well.
For all of you who don't know, if you've taken the injections, in virtually every single case, your blood is now thick like sludge. And I heard Nurse Ann described the heart in atrial fib as just not pumping blood out, just sitting there quivering and the blood pooling, the blood sludge in a big gunky mess, unable to be pushed through the arteries by the heart, which isn't pumping normally anyway. Is this sludge blood wearing the hearts down to where they get atrial fib?
Yeah, that's the problem. The heart is working overtime. The heart's working overtime to try and pump the blood, and the atria are not actually working the way they should. They're just quivering and allowing the blood to pool, which forms a clot. And so the blood gets thicker and thicker, and then the heart has to work that much harder and harder to pump. And you'll see a lot of issues with the right and left ventricle will enlargement as well. You'll see this in the history. I'll be honest, there isn't a patient I haven't seen that doesn't have at least five major organs affected before I see them.
All right, everyone, I hope you heard that. These are vaxxed patients, virtually all of them are vaxxed, that go into the ER, and they're showing up and presenting with up to, on an average, of maybe five major organs having one kind of trouble or another. And they're all interrelated, of course. This is, Erica, horrific.
Yeah, it is. It is. And do you know what their history is before they show up? Have they had previous events?
Oh, yeah. I usually have. I'll have all of their medical history right in front of me. So the typical, the one case I talked about, the typical history for that person is this is what she came in with. So they'll have high cholesterol, hypertension, which is new, by the way, for her. She never had it before. New onset AFib, never had that before. She comes in with migraines. That was probably the precipitating event before she had the stroke, and that was it. That was it for her. That was the only thing in her history.
Oh boy!
And then she ended up with all of this, and it was a DNR deny, and she was 60 years of age. This lady.
All right, explain DNR for everyone, please, Nurse Ann. They may not know.
So this. So the DNR is basically do not resuscitate, and do the DNI is do not intubate. So before she ever got to our unit, they had already started getting to the family, saying, we got to talk to you, we got to tell you how severe and critical this case is. So they had already known that this lady was going to be a very complicated case. And neuro was on this case, surgery was on the case, cardiology had been brought in on the case. This was one of these nights where they brought all the specialists into the ER to consult. And then they basically said that there's no good way to treat her because how she presented.
I'm also hearing...
But they sent her up to the floor for us to manage her for 24 hours. And she, before she was a DNR. So she was a full code up until 24 hours later, which means anything could have happened in that time and we would have been coding her.
I'm hearing also the possibility that in addition to all of the other things we've talked about over these years, that the spike does to the immune system, to the blood, the circulatory system, to the endothelial cells on the walls of all your blood vessels. In addition to all that, you've got vax blood. You've got vax sludge in your system that is taxing the hell out of your heart to try to push it through. I hear you say migraine. I mean, I'm thinking that this sludge blood could be causing a lot of things that we're not even talking about regularly.
Well, also, it's easy to overlook the kidneys. The kidneys in a lot of these people are very damaged.
Yes, they are. They usually end up, if they're not in DNRs or DNIs, they're usually, if they're in the hospital at all, they're going to be getting dialysis.
Wow. Okay.
And the other thing that they're presenting with is another biggie. Mm-hmm. This is huge. Is people are complaining of headaches, eye pain, and blurry vision. And guess what? That's the lead up to a massive stroke.
Oh, boy.
Sludge. I hear sludge at work in these things, too. Sludge is playing a big role. That'll give you a headache.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got a head full of sludge? Good God. Wow. See, this is so much worse than the mainstream media is telling any of the people on the planet, basically. They're not telling them any of this.
What's it, Mark Siegel on Fox News tell everybody that low life,
that creep.
It's safe and effective, and these side effects or these adverse events are simply because we've vaccinated so many people that, you know, if we'd done that with any other vaccine, we'd probably see the same thing. But no, these are safe and effective, and they will dramatically reduce your chances of severe COVID.
Right.
And don't even question whether you should get a booster.
No, don't. And the good Dr. Siegel said, there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that this shot is a bioweapon.
Oh, no.
Going to any ER in this country, and I beg to differ.
Oh, we differ. He said that. He's a shill. He's been on the payroll for a long time.
Just like Peter Hotez.
Same. Exactly. Same thing.
Yeah. And the worst part about all of this is the patients themselves don't realize the damage they've done to themselves. They listen to a medical establishment and news and all these news feeds that convince them otherwise. There was all these vax clinics running around the country, all of them lining up. Now, I know there was your program and other programs that tried to reach out to these people to educate. And trust me when I tell you this, I worked with a nurse friend of mine in this hospital. She's a travel nurse. And she said she's totally against the back, and she said that she had been asked to do a job on the clinic out in California, and she went out because she said she just wanted to see would anyone really show up at the clinic. Well, she said you couldn't keep them away. And then when they were going to the clinic, she was trying to tell them, are you sure this is something you want to do? And she would try and educate as many people, but she had to be really careful. And then she said, if they said, no, this is absolutely something I want to do, what? And if there was anyone who questioned why she was trying to talk them out of it, she was a little bit nervous. She walked a fine line. And she said one day she was working with a physician, and he was pushing the shots on these people, she said, did you take the shot? And he said, no, I didn't. And then so, well, why are you pushing it on these people? Why don't you try and educate the patients, because they don't know. They don't know what they don't know. And and he said, well, it is their right to choose. But yet the medical establishment pushed
that. How can he say that? It's the most uninformed choice they'll ever make in their lives.
Exactly.
So what you're saying...
I would never be able to do what that girl did, because my conscience would always get to me. And now she took that clinic job. She did it for like a month. And
she was jabbing people every day. Every day she's jabbing people.
Yeah. But she tried very hard to talk them out of it. She tried. They didn't want to listen.
Wow. I don't know what to say. This is incredible. I guess in the ER, they don't even see any broken legs anymore or broken arms. It's all people stroking out and having heart attacks. The other people probably go to walk-in clinics.
Yeah. They're probably turned away from the ER door because they're not as critical as the people coming in.
There's a groundswell, I'm telling you, there's a groundswell, a tsunami of people who are just at death's door. They're just about to go down. And it's all incremental. It's all different. They all have different timelines, but they're going down. And that's what you're hearing.
The other thing, too, is their behaviors. The brain is so affected now, the family don't know. They don't know their loved one anymore. The behaviors are kind of abusive, but they don't know any better, and they require having sitters to sit in the room so that they don't get hurt and climb out of bed and fall and hurt themselves. But this impulsive behaviors, this is all coming from strokes and bleeds.
And the simple fact that the spike protein, apparently, whether it's the frontal lobe or whatever, is causing massive personality changes without even stroking people. Maybe because of microstroke, or microclots, we don't know. But there's so many things psychologically involved now with this after-the-shot syndrome that these poor people, they don't really have a chance. I don't know how that woman could do that, but I don't know. At least she tried to save some. That was good.
That's the thing. It's interesting to find out where people draw the line. I mean, another scenario. I was in the same hospital, this girl came up and she just asked me to help her out with reading the cardiac strip because she couldn't figure out what it was basically telling her. And I looked at her, I was puzzled, absolutely puzzled. And she goes, I'm just not very good with the cardiac rhythm. And I'm thinking to myself, how did you get this damn job?
She's a travel nurse making huge money, and she can't read a strip from a cardiac monitor.
She couldn't read the cardiac strip. She couldn't she couldn't figure it out. And so my guesstimation is that, because they all get tested on it. You get tested on how to read cardiac rhythm. And my guesstimation is that she had someone else take her test.
Well, people will do anything for money. You know that.
That's it.
Wow.
Ted Brower says it, for the love of money.
That's right.
All the time.
Erica, anything else? We're just about out of time here. You must have something you want to ask here at some point that we haven't been able to work in yet. Go ahead.
No, I can't think of anything at the moment. I probably will, but...
Well, we've covered a lot of ground, for sure.
Do you foresee yourself taking another contract once you get back?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so tired. I am so tired, and I'm so beat. and I'm so disheartened. That, and I keep saying that I went into this profession trying to save people, and I don't know if I can save anybody anymore.
Yeah.
They're simply not recovering, getting well, and going home to live life again. It's not happening.
Mm-hmm. And that was it in the Bible. They said it. The life of the flesh is in the blood. Just remember that.
Yeah.
You mean in the sludge, don't you? Uh-huh. Yeah.
No, there's no life in that sludge.
No. I don't want to speak for Erica, but we both wish you a wonderful trip, you and yours. Have a grand time. Put this out of your mind as much as you can and regain your strength. You are a hero, a true human hero, and you are appreciated greatly.
Here. Thank you. It was very nice to talk to you guys again.
Thank you for coming
pleasure.
On, Ian.
You're
be
welcome.
Safe.
Anytime.
Have a wonderful trip.
Thank you very much. I'll be seeing the aisle, the Green Isle here soon.
Okay.
All right. All right, thank
good night.
You. Bye-bye.
Okay, good night, Ian.
Well, to say... That was an eye-opener for many reasons, is an understatement. It's certainly verification of what we've been suggesting for a long time here, that things are percolating and people are still getting around. They're still feeling functional. Maybe they don't feel good, but they're still functional. You see them out and about. They don't look sick, but if they've had two or three shots boosted, God bless them all. They're in trouble. And that CCP video is constantly in the back of my mind. It's like they knew. They were told. The Americans, don't worry about the Americans. Everyone who's taken a shot is dead. That's what they said. It's not what we said. But that's what their view is, at least in one video recording of a group meeting. All right. Wow.
Yeah, if you don't have healthy blood, every organ and tissue suffers. The viscosity of the blood, the health of the blood.
The poor heart is overworked 25 hours a day, and her description of that ventricle just sitting there quivering.
Yeah.
Unable to pump the blood. Its heart is exhausted, and it's breaking down. It can't push this sludge. It's thick, viscous sludge. You've all seen it. If you paid attention, we've shown it to you. It's there, and it's frightful. Okay. Wow. Talk to you soon. Great job. Thank you.
Okay.
As always.
Thank you,
we'll
Jeff.
All
right. Okay. Good night, everyone.
Sit tight. We'll be right back with more in just a few minutes. Hold on.